Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Cinema D'Amore. I am one of your hosts, James Reinhardt.
Chuck Phillips.
I'm Chuck Morgan. I'm a dog.
And for if you're a new listener, that is my dog Freya in the background, barking at nothing.
Honestly, I could have probably cut it out, and I could probably still cut him. I could probably still cut him out, and then it's just me saying that was a dog for no reason.
We could leave it in. I don't know. I mean,
all right.
So this episode's we're back to themes after, you know, stumbling through a themeless couple of weeks. And this kicks off our Halloween theme, which, Chuck, this was your idea.
Yeah, I had the thought of we typically the past 3 years we've done the all-American Halloween film, which is Halloween, of course. Thought a different direction, change of direction might be to go with, you know, things around the world, get a little cultured out there, read some subtitles.
I do have to say the subtitles for this film were wonderful.
Yeah, and if you've been listening to us for a while, every year we've done a Halloween theme on of the John Carpenter Halloween movies. We've discuss them every year for Halloween, and this year was going to be no different, because originally Halloween Kills was supposed to come out, but a little thing called COVID happened. Chuck came up with his idea for this international horror film idea, and here we are.
Yeah.
And so we're doing horror films from all around the world, from different countries. And I picked leading up until Halloween. And the film I picked this week was F.W. Murnau's Nosferatu, one of the earliest and probably most influential horror films.
Kind of happens when you're the earliest.
Yeah. And it's one of those things that, obvious, if you know the history of this film was almost lost, thanks to a lawsuit. Every copy is ordered to be destroyed, but, you know, obviously some stuck around, and this film has endured. It's almost 100 years old, going to be 100 years old in 2022, and I still, you know, it still looks pretty damn good. And as Justin pointed out, there are some interesting subtitles, or intertitles, as they're called.
I was going to say that I watched this on Amazon Prime. You can, too. And I have subtitles on, and it's really funny because I think for just naturally have subtitles on. I didn't just put them on.
You didn't put subtitles on for the silent movie.
For about 20 minutes, it just says silent at the bottom. And I thought that was great. And I thought it would keep up the whole movie. It didn't. It eventually went away. But when people were moving their lips, it's like, it's silent. Don't worry.
It doesn't suddenly change to a talkie in mid-view.
It would be interesting to have people that could read lips watch these and see if they are saying their lines, or if they're like,
you can,
fuck you, it's yeah, stupid.
You can sometimes see it. Like, I do try sometimes to see when it'll put up a, typically you kind of can notice it because they're all like theater actors, so they're used to like projecting and overacting to begin with. And every once in a while I'll try to catch, like, if there's a long subtitle and see if it looks like they're saying the last line when it finally cuts back to the picture. And so, there are some times where you can tell it's not, like, they definitely, in editing or something, maybe changed what that character was saying.
Do you also understand German? Like, could you tell that what he was saying in German was accurate to the English translation?
Well, not in this one, but in the American silent films I've been watching lately, you can.
It seemed to have a pretty good mix of horror films on Amazon Prime also.
I'm just gonna throw out there, Justin, you could watch this movie for free on YouTube. So, you know, just go to YouTube. It's public domain.
Yeah. I had the same thought as James, though, and I'm watching it. I'm like, you know what? This is almost 100 years old. It's amazing. It probably, who knows the other films that were lost and, you know, just throughout time. But I feel like historically the idea of this one is that it just really impressed people with the types of stories that could be told. He had a lot of really experimental stuff, like just to see what they could do. And this was really putting story into it. Obviously not the first, but something that stood out enough that people that were ordered to destroy it for copyright issues or whatever decided to keep it and hide it.
Yeah, and I guess we should go a little into the history for those who don't know, even though I feel like most probably do know the story behind Nosferatu. Murnau and a few other filmmakers wanted to adapt Bram Stoker's Dracula. Either they couldn't get the rights or didn't even try to get the rights, but they tried to get around. They tried?
I don't think they tried.
Yeah, like I always assumed it was they couldn't get the rights, but when I researched this, it seemed like they just were like, well, we're going to make it and change the characters' names and hope they don't notice. And obviously, Bram Stoker's estate did notice, and you know, there was a lawsuit, and as part of the lawsuit, they were ordered to destroy the film, and people obviously saved it. But yeah, and if you watch this, if you're familiar with the story of Dracula, it is pretty much beat for beat Dracula, minus a few changes here and there. And but yes, yeah, somehow it survived, and it's one of those things, like when you talk about great vampire movies, this is always in the mix, and it's probably, I would say, as far as like dictating the language of horror films and the language of vampire films, this film really set that tone, where it has a very gothic atmosphere. It's a very atmospheric film in general, and just every vampire film from this point is kind of built off of this one.
Also, you have a very specific vampire that will always be referred to as the Nosferatu vampire. That pale, more bat-like, you know, less Bela Lugosi, you know, just slick. yeah, more of the creature. Just, it's that very distinct, like, long fingers, and you see it in Salem's Lot, and it's like, we went with the Nosferatu style. It's its own thing.
Yeah, yeah, it's the thing. And I remember as a kid reading, like, books about horror movies and seeing pictures from Nosferatu, and just the way the vampire looked just really struck me. Like, I really wanted to see this as a kid, because the vampire looked like no other vampire I'd seen before. Like, you had this tall, gaunt figure, these pointed ears, these long nails, and, like, these like, two prominent fangs in the front teeth. He just looks so unsettling. And it's weird watching Nosferatu and watching, like, Harker talk to him like he's a normal person, the character's not named Harker, he's named Hutter, but the vampire, instead of being Count Dracula's name, Count Orlok, which is still a really cool name. Yeah, it's weird just watching Hutter try to speak to him like he doesn't look like this weird bat person.
They were more accepting back then.
Maybe they were. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, a good decade before World War II, and Germany was very accepting of all types of people.
Maybe that's why he was getting out of Germany. He saw what was happening and thought, I got to get out of this place.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing that I didn't know. If maybe, James, if you knew more about that, just in any sort of research or having read Dracula. I've seen so many adaptations, and I don't think I've ever seen a single one explain why he wants to leave Transylvania and go to, you know, sometimes he's going to London. In this one, he's going to Germany. He's always going somewhere else. And it's never explained why. He just like, I'm just leaving.
Yeah, I haven't really, in the book never says it. And I never really find any, I know in some people, they have theories that that it was implied that maybe, you know, the people of Transylvania, of that area where Dracula was, they were obviously kind of wise to his acts, so they had taken precautions against him, so it was getting tougher for him to find victims, and that's why he wanted to leave, because he wanted a fresh hunting ground. That's like generally the accepted theory for why he was looking to move, but it's never explicitly said in the book, or to my knowledge of any of the adaptations.
I feel like the vampire trope usually has, it's sort of like the serial killer trope. When people are starting to catch on to them, they have to move along.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of always thought it was that, but I do like how creepy he is in this. Like, he doesn't look normal at all. Although all the characters kind of seem like caricatures of people. They're all a little goofy. Maybe it has something to do with the stage acting that Chuck brought up, since they seem to overact a little bit. But it's such a great movie with this design, like just how they've thought about things, and even the cheesier things, like, you know, them stopping the camera to make it look like he opened the door by himself, like I don't know, or how he stacks up his coffins in like 2 seconds flat and takes off.
Yeah,
that's cool. That's my favorite thing. I love the, like, that's just such a weird, it makes it, like how we were saying how he's supposed to be sinister, I think that makes it weird, like, just the way he, like, looks out the window, and it's that stop motion, like jerky, like, it's stacked up, and then he, like, gets in, and it slowly slides over him. Like, it's such a weird thing.
That's, like, one of my favorite parts is, you know, this really jerky, fast, him loading all these coffins onto a cart, then he loads the last one in on top, open, gets into it, and then, like, the top of it floats in place. But then when he gets to, he has these powers apparently where he can, you know, move things with his mind. But then when he gets to Germany or wherever he's going, you know, bro's awkwardly carrying his coffin down the streets in what's supposed to be darkness, but they filmed it in like the middle of the afternoon. So he's walking in broad daylight carrying this coffin. And I'm like, really? You can't levitate it with your mind? You got to be awkwardly like just carrying your coffin tucked under your arm.
It's kind of badass him walking around with this coffin under his arm.
Yeah, I guess, like, if I saw a dude that looked like that walking with a coffin tucked under his arm, like, I wouldn't stop him. I'd just, you know, I'd go the opposite way.
You'd walk across the street to avoid him.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's just, like, all, like, the cool effects, too. And, you know, when he finally, he's out too late, and the cock, you got to beware of the cock or whatever. just the cool effects of it looking like he dissolves. I think that it's really neat. I think in the, like, if you weren't used to any kind of special effects, in camera effects at the time, I think even how we said it's not the greatest, it has to have blown people's mind, and they're like, what else can be done?
Yeah, this is also the film that created the Hollywood trope that sunlight kills vampires. Because in the book Dracula, they mentioned that vampires are just weaker during the daytime, so that's why they usually use that as their sleeping time, because they don't have all their powers. But this changed it so that obviously, if you know he's out during the daylight, the sunlight will kill him, and that carried on through vampire media to this day.
Do you think anything with like a rooster's crow, and they're like, that's just kind of dumb, they crow when the sun comes up?
Yeah.
Yeah, I have no idea how. I mean, obviously some changes, but I don't know if it happened afterwards, but they credit the book that they've taken the story from, unless it's just the American version. And
I think it's something they added later.
Yeah, because I know in some American versions of, because in the original, the intertitles, as they called them, you know, their characters, they were like Count Orlok, Cutter, his wife Ellen. But I know in the American version of this, they change it so that the characters' names are Thomas Harker and Count Dracula and Van Helsing and stuff like that. So it really depends on what version you're watching.
Yeah, mine was the American from 29 version, and it did say Dracula.
Yeah, yeah, I think that was added later. This film like really kind of won because, you know, Bram Stoker's estate sued, and they you know, were ordered to destroy it, and you know, it survived, and it's just kind of thriving to the point where, like, now you have versions that acknowledge this based off of Dracula. So this film just stubbornly like stood its ground somehow and beat Bram Stoker's estate. And even Werner Herzog did a remake in the 70s, and in the remake, the remake is more faithful to Dracula than the original Nosferatu, and the character's name is Count Dracula, and Thomas Harker and his wife Mina and all that stuff.
It's Lucy in that one, because for reason,
Lucy, yeah.
That's a weird thing, because I don't think that's the only one that's done that. I know there's a few other ones, like, I can't remember, does the Hammer one switch the names around too?
I think the Hammer one does it, and there's a version with Frank Langella that has both Mina and Lucy in it, but the characters essentially switch roles. Mina plays the Lucy role in a way, Lucy plays the Mina.
That's a weird thing that I've always wondered, why on earth, just every once in a while, somebody makes a Dracula movie and they're like, I want those names switched. And that's the only thing, like, the most faithful adaptations, that's the only thing they'll, for some reason, like, change very frequently. They'll just randomly be like, Lucy's a better main character name.
Yeah, I feel like it's James's professional obligation to know that information share it with us.
I honestly don't know, because like Chuck, I've noticed that in lots of Dracula adaptations, they'll switch around the character names or like give one character like a role that a different character played and give that different character another. Yeah, I don't know why they do that, but they do. But yeah. Yeah, Chuck and I, we were talking before we were recording, like, he watched the Werner Herzog's remake, and I watched that earlier in the, during the pandemic, I rewatched it, and, yeah, like, I like the remake a lot. I feel like I still prefer the original, and the original Herzog says he thinks is the greatest German film ever made, but his remake's still pretty solid.
Yeah, he stays faithful enough. I feel like his is a really good blend if you just want like all the best of those versions. Like, he puts in a lot of the American and like Hammer style Dracula stuff in, but he still wants to be as faithful as possible to the changes that Murnau made. So I feel like it's a good compromise if you want like the best of both worlds. You don't want like the suave, charming Dracula of like the Universal and Hammer films, but you want a little bit of monster from, you know, Murnau.
Yeah, I would say that. There's some really good, some great shots in Herzog's. There's also, obviously, there's lots of great shots in the original. And there's just some really good atmosphere in both films. Like, you tell that Herzog was enamored of the original film and wanted to recreate as much of the original, as like that feeling as he could. And then, you know, Chuck and I were also discussing, which a lot of people, I think a lot of people know about Nosferatu through this film called Shadow of the Vampire, which is a fictionalized account of the making of Nosferatu, in which the vampire is actually, the actor playing the vampire, Max Schreck, is actually a vampire, and he's played by Willem Dafoe. But, you were saying that's kind of hard to find. It was on Prime briefly, but I don't think it's on anymore.
Yeah, like I said, I feel like it kind of got forgotten. I mean, Willem Dafoe got nominated for an Academy Award for his performance and got nominated for makeup effects for recreating the appearance of Max Schreck. So, you know, I feel like it's worth seeking out. If you like Nosferatu, or even if you just like vampire movies in general, it's a good good horror comedy and a good kind of tribute to silent films in general. They use a lot of the they like try to faithfully recreate the look of a silent film with like the full screen picture and the wind up camera style to it. Like they try to faithfully get you into that mindset of, you know, what it would be like to make a movie in 1922.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, and Defoe looks great in the makeup. Like he looks like Max Schreck.
Yeah. He looks like Max Schreck, and he really does look like, he looks like Klaus Kinski too. Like they, but he looks like a mix of both of them, like right in the middle of, he could have just been recreating either of their versions.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, and like this film like really does have a far-reaching influence, and like my first, I was already aware of this film when I was pretty young, because I loved like monster movies growing up. But I remember Are You Afraid of the Dark did a sort of Nosferatu homage, where Nosferatu like comes out of they're watching a film with a vampire, it's obviously meant to be like Nosferatu. But then something happens and he like comes out of the movie. Do you guys remember that episode?
Yeah. I actually, that was probably my first introduction to him. And I'm trying to remember what that episode was. It took place in a movie theater and he was coming out of the movie theater. And yeah, that's the first introduction to the Nosferatu version of Dracula.
Yeah. Cause I was going to ask, I was like, was that anyone else's introduction or, yeah, how, if not, how did you hear about this film?
I would say that's probably the first time I like saw that character. And then I know the first time I ever watched this movie was probably when I was like 13, because again, it's public domain, so if you buy any of those, like I would just go to the dollar store or like Walmart, and they would have those packs that are like, you know, would have like Dawn of the Dead. That's the first time I ever watched that. Carnival of Souls is on those packs usually. Like, just buy that, and then it has that, Phantom, Hunchback of Notre Dame. So that's like how I started watching all those films, was just go to the dollar store, and for a dollar you can watch random old horror films.
Yeah, yeah, I have one of those packs that has like all those movies too. And it's weird, like these movies are kind of like put in these discount bins, but they're like, you know, like you said, this, Phantom, Carnival of Souls, these great classics that kind of deserve better, but also, you know, these sets are relatively inexpensive and they're a good way to check out the classics.
Yeah, I think they're a good way to get in, because I would say any of the films that I saw that I really enjoyed, I've repurchased all of them. I've rebought Dawn of the Dead, it's on the Criterion. I've bought the Blu-ray of Phantom of the Opera. I've got Carnival of Souls on Criterion. Like, it's a good like starter, and if you really like that movie, I think most people will go and buy a better upgraded copy so they can keep watching a better version of it.
Yeah. I think you mean Night of the Living Dead.
Which one did I say?
Dawn of the Dead.
Whatever.
There's actually a pretty sweet looking who's making that set that's like that massive Dawn of the Dead set that's coming out this year.
I don't remember. I don't think it's Arrow, and I don't think it's Shout Factory. Might be that Synapse Films, maybe.
Second, I don't know.
I know who you're talking about. And I can't think of
Second Sights or something like that.
I think that's it.
Second Chance Video. Look, I have no idea what it is. But yeah, I kind of want to rewatch the Herzog film. I bought his collection like a couple years ago and watched all of them. When James said that he thought that Nosferatu was like the quintessential German film, that almost sounds like anything that Herzog says about anything. It's always like the most fascinating thing that he's ever seen or done. It's like Grizzly Man? Just like, yeah. His fascination, like his excitement will draw you into all of his work.
That's why Werner Herzog can't be a Jedi. He deals in absolutes. He's like, this is this is the definitive German film. Like, someone starts questioning it. No, it's final. I said it's the definitive German film.
Well, I mean, you know, I don't know enough about German cinema to really, you know, agree or disagree with Herzog, but we talked about this when we did Metropolis, is how much early German cinema really influenced the rest of cinema, especially American cinema. You know, there's lots of influence from Metropolis, and then in this movie too. Like,
do you prefer Metropolis to this?
I'd probably say I prefer Metropolis. I as much as I love Nosferatu, there are some points where you do kind of feel like it kind of drags.
Doesn't sound too definitive to me.
Well, you're dealing with absolutes now, but like I always say about Metropolis is when I went to watch it, I'm like, oh Christ, this is a 2.5 hour silent film. This could be brutal, but it's the pacing is great in Metropolis. It held my attention throughout. Whereas in Nosferatu, there are a couple points where I started to drift.
It probably honestly doesn't help that you're so familiar with Dracula's story. And yeah. It's like hitting it beat by beat by beat. So it's maybe not that as thrilling as it could be when you know it that well.
Maybe that's the case. Like I do find a lot of the scenes of just the human characters interacting in Nosferatu to be kind of tedious. Obviously anytime the vampire's on screen, which they use him sparingly, which I think is wise, but he's, you know, he's such a strange force that your eyes are just kind of glued to him to see what's happening next.
That's kind of how I feel with, I felt that way watching both versions of Nosferatu. And I would probably even say also like even Universal's Dracula is, I don't know. I think the pacing's fine. I think they just all start really slow, and I think maybe that's kind of what Justin's bringing up of all the opening parts where it's Jonathan Harker like just preparing, and you're just like, yeah, I know. Just get to the castle already. I know you're gonna see the vampire. Like just in your mind, there's a slight impatience when you just want him to get to the vampire and get to like the horror aspect of it. It's like all just a very standard like drama at the beginning of. Just, okay, well, I'm packing to leave. Now I'm getting ready to leave. Now I'm going to the inn. And you're like, just get to the vampire already.
So I have a question for James, if he knows this, because I expect that he could possibly know this. The actor that played Orlok is Max Schreck, which is the name used by Christopher Walken's character in Batman Returns. Is there any correlation besides maybe that obviously Tim Burton just fucking loves this movie?
I think it's just that Tim Burton loves this film. And I was getting at that when I was talking about the influence of German cinema on American cinema, because obviously these films like this Cabinet, Dr. Caligari, a couple other ones, they really influenced the American horror films that came, you know, 10 years or so later. But German expressionism and the early Universal Monster films obviously had a huge impact on Burton. You see a lot of that in his films, and a lot in Batman. There's a little bit of the German expressionistic style in the first Batman, don't get me wrong, but Batman Returns, like Burton went full out, just made a fucking like old school kind of grotesque, like Chuck and I, once again, we were talking before we were recording, and we were talking about lots of early silent films seem to revolve around like amputees and disfigured characters. And I was watching a documentary on the Universal Monsters, and they talked about how in World War I, medical science had advanced that injuries that would normally kill soldiers in a war weren't, but they're coming back missing limbs or disfigured, and making these horror films, not quite horror films, but these films about kind of these grotesque characters was kind of society's way of processing this. And I feel like Burton was trying to make a modern version of these old silent films of Batman Returns, where the style is very German expressionistic, like this very exaggerated style of, you know, no real straight lines yet. Then everything's kind of larger than life. And you have this character, the main character is a character named the Penguin, who's obviously born with some sort of disfigurement, and he's lashing out the world for treating him this way. And then you have a character named Max Schreck, played by Christopher Walken. I feel like that's Burton really just driving it home that these, that, you know, old German horror films and old silent horror films are what really influenced Batman Returns. And that's probably why I love Batman. I loved Tim Burton's films growing up. And that's probably why I loved the Universal Monster films, because they reminded me so much of Tim Burton's Batman films, as they all have a very similar visual style.
I mean, that's probably my favorite. Just, I don't know. It's just so easy to go back to time and time again. But Burton seems to have quite a fascination for freaks. I guess he's always felt like an outsider. So whatever way he can push that outsiderism, I guess.
Yeah.
He loves showcasing that, and he loves characters, main characters, that he gets to put people in those people's shoes. I don't know so much as far as like the early silent films that you were talking about using amputation and stuff as horror, but I mean, there's a stigmatism to it too. You know, these people are going, risking their life. And it's very common for them to amputate things without trying to really help them. On top of the fact that, you know, America, at least we'll just go with American in general, they depict the soldier as the hero, you know, the big buff, manly man, and he's perfect in every aspect, and that's what that's what represents America. And you have these people that, you know, are not representing the image that they're trying to push forward. So I'm sure there was some sort of stigma on it, on top of the fact that, you know, no one's going to respect me when I go back and after all I've done.
And like, you know, Chuck brought up a film when we were talking. He brought up a Lon Chaney film where he plays a double amputee. And I confused it for another one in which Chaney plays an amputee. And I was, cause like Chuck was like, oh yeah, he does this movie. I'm like, what was it called, Chuck?
The Penalty.
Yeah. He's a character of no arms and no legs, right?
Just no legs. He walks around on like he has these just leather stumps, and then he walks around on crutches.
Yeah. And I confuse it with another film, where Chaney's a man of no arms. And then you got films like,
I'm sorry. Yeah, it's funny. That was a terrible laugh on my part, but
just that he did funny. Two he's separate like, movies with two different amputations.
I did two. It was both of his arms missing in that one. Was he a double amputee in both, but one was legs and one was arms.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great. They're like, I've already done double amputee. Have you done it without your arms?
He's I'm in.
And the one I've heard about, he's like, he has like a disfigured, he's a criminal and he has like a disfigured hand, and he gets a double amputation so that they can't use his hands to identify him anymore. And he joins like a circus, and he falls in love with like one of the women in the circus who's in love with the strong man. So he's like trying to like scheme to kill the strong man so he can end up with this woman.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. So you have like those movies, and then you have like Hunchback of Notre Dame, Phantom of the Opera, also starring Chaney. And then you have The Man Who Laughs, starring Conrad Veidt, which is about a guy who's disfigured. As a child, he's disfigured so that he has a permanent smile. And then he's like paraded around at freak shows. And that character, as everyone knows, not everyone, but a lot of people know now, that character was the inspiration for the character of the Joker. So the Conrad Veidt character in The Man Who Laughs is a very tragic figure.
Okay. I have to say, I looked up James's film, cause I had to know the name of it and more about it. It's called The Unknown, and it's directed by Todd Browning, who also directed Dracula and Freaks. So apparently that's just a weird thing with him, is like deformed circus people. He just enjoys that. I think he did this one before Freaks. So maybe this set off the idea in his mind when he started like meeting.
What year is that movie?
1927.
Okay, so he did The Penalty first, which was worse, I guess.
The Penalty
directed by Wallace Worsley.
Yeah, that's the one where he doesn't have legs. This is the one where he plays He plays, what's his name? Alonzo the Armless.
But this is really funny because the description for the penalty is starts off being, as a child, Blizzard is involved in a car accident. And I just think that is, that's fucking awesome.
That's what I told James is that's what they keep calling him that. And he's like this criminal mastermind.
Oh, yeah, he's the head of the San Francisco mob.
You can never take it seriously when they're like, Blizzard's on the move again. And like, even like even like his closest people are like, Blizzard, what are you up to? And I'm just like, I can't take him seriously.
He clearly influenced Mr. Freeze because this is all, it all goes to Batman.
Yeah.
Well, even, Todd Browning, you bring up Freaks. The entire point of that movie is like the beautiful, quote unquote, normal looking woman is terrible. She's a monster on the inside, whereas the Freaks are, you know, good people. And Burton does that a lot. I mean, obviously Edward Scissorhands with like the good looking jock dude. And then Batman Returns, like, even though Oswald Cobblepot is a terrible character, he's ultimately a tragic character. And the biggest monster in that movie is Max Schreck, who has this very beloved public persona, and, you know, puts up this image as like a good looking upstanding citizen, but he's like the worst person out of all the characters in that movie.
He pushes his secretary out the window.
Yeah. And they imply that he's murdered a lot of people to get where he is in life.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But he's like the real villain of Batman Returns. Like, Penguin is a villain and Catwoman is a villain ish. But Max Schreck is the guy like manipulating every character in this movie.
He's the one that chooses to be the villain. Like Catwoman and Penguin, you know, Penguin's just born deformed and Catwoman is murdered by her boss. Like, Max Schreck's the only one that actively chooses to be a bad person.
Yeah, it's so these old movies, like, they all, you could see them all in Tim Burton, and that's why it's important to know.
Freaks is a very, very good movie, but I can't see it as a horror film.
Yeah,
I don't I'm know. Sure at the time it made people uncomfortable, but I find it to be like a very nice drama with people with, you know, physical issues.
Yeah, I don't consider Freaks a horror film. I love Freaks, but I don't consider it one.
Yeah, that's another kind of like thing that me and James were talking about. Like, we brought up the man.
I get it. You and James talk.
We just had a we had a great conversation.
We had a great 10-minute episode.
We're gonna rub it in your face.
Yeah, keep doing it.
But yeah, that's the same thing with The Man Who Laughs, where they got the inspiration for the Joker's appearance. Is it is labeled, it's in a set that I own from Kino, that's American Silent Horror Films. And that film is not really a horror film. It's just the guy, the main character's face is very grotesque because he has this permanent grin that he can never get rid of. And that's kind of the whole point of that movie. It's not a horror film at all. It's just a very like sad movie about a guy whose life is terrible because everyone's constantly laughing at him and calling him a clown. Because
that sounds like a horror film to me. If you had people constantly laughing at you because of your disfigurement, I would consider that a horror movie. It's not scary like a slasher film or anything, but
no, that's
more, it's like situationally terrible.
That's a tragedy, not a horror movie.
I don't know.
Yeah, like it sounds like a tragedy. I mean, I've never seen The Man Who Laughs. I do want to eventually, but
I think that might be on Amazon Prime also. Maybe. Probably also public domain.
Yeah, a lot of these movies are.
That'll be that's our actual theme. It's public domain. Music and movies, whatever we can do without getting sued.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Nosferatu, back to that. Obviously, I don't know if it's just because it's so old, but it's clearly influencing so many things, especially the Universal monster movies, because if that had not come out in the United States till 1929, and we know how fast they got into productions, and when was this When was Dracula the Spanish Dracula?
That was the same time as the American one. So 1931, because basically as soon as there was filming at the same time as the American one. So as soon as the American crew finished filming, the Spanish crew would come on and shoot their version.
So this feels like it has to be almost directly influencing Dracula, you know? Yeah,
I feel like it did. I feel like this and Caligari and Metropolis, like all three of them, really influenced the American filmmakers. I would say like this is probably more watchable than at least the American version of Dracula, because, and I've said this before, the early talkies are kind of tough because all it is, you know, they can only place the mic in a certain spot and the actors have to stand close to the mic and talk. And the early and the 31 Dracula, they took.
Are you moving away from your mic?
I might be. Yeah.
It looked like dramatic effect. You're like sometimes when they have the mic in a special spot and then he came back.
I was shifting in my seat. But but yeah, so the 31 Dracula is based off of they took the script from a stage adaptation, and it feels like a stage play. It's just characters standing in a room talking, and at the end, Dracula's killed off screen. Whereas in Nosferatu, you know, it's silent film, so it's pure cinema. They're using the pictures to tell the story. It's pretty much action from beginning to end. There's so much great atmosphere, like the boat sequence on Nosferatu, I think is fucking amazing. But the boat sequence in any Dracula adaptations, usually always my favorite adaptation. I just love this mini horror story inside of a bigger horror story of these sailors slowly getting picked off one by one. And I love how they did it in Nosferatu. And I don't even know if that's a thing in the 31 Dracula, but other than a few really cool shots in Bela Lugosi's performance, the 31 Dracula, in my opinion, is kind of tough to watch as opposed to Nosferatu.
Yeah, I can see it. But we're talking about influence too, you know, not how enjoyable things are.
I think I went off on a side tangent, but this definitely influenced it.
Yeah, it's like I've always been fascinated with just trying to go in order and just see the growth and how. Obviously, we don't have a lot of reactions to fans at the time and theater goers because I don't know, not a lot of stuff has survived that says how people really felt about it.
It's interesting looking at these old movies, because like you read about there's this first wave of Universal horror films in like, you know, in the 30s, and then they mentioned that like in the 40s, you know, people kind of started rediscovering them because, you know, theaters would play like double bills or them during this day, and that led to a resurgence of popularity. But it wasn't that much time had passed between these movies, but because there wasn't TV, because there wasn't streaming or the internet, like, you know, movies came out and then they're kind of gone unless you like caught these like, you know, resurgence showings that other theaters were doing. So it is really interesting to hear about how like a new generation of fans rediscovered these movies. But at that time, only like 5 years or so had passed. It was just, you know, they missed them in theaters, so they had to wait till they could catch them again.
Yeah, that's cool. I mean, it's always interested me.
Yeah. It's
interesting. It'd be funny to go back and everyone's like, Nosferatu sucked. We hated that movie.
Yeah. Yeah, I wonder what the reactions would be, or people that loved Nosferatu and then saw Dracula, what their reactions would be like. But yeah, obviously filmmakers in America were seeing this movie and taking copious notes, because, you know, I think if you look at the early cycle of Universal horror films, they atmospherically they look like Nosferatu. They took a ton from this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, like, I don't know. I mean, Lugosi, like I said, Lugosi's Dracula, I like his performance. And I feel like a lot of the visual language of that film they took from Nosferatu. But I feel like if you had a lot of Nosferatu's visuals, Lugosi's Dracula would have been, it would have been really something. But as far as, I feel like if you're looking at like the gothic nature of early horror films, which is now kind of forever associated with horror, it probably can go back to this one, or really more now in general, because he did like that Haxan movie, right? Which I haven't seen yet.
No, that's I think that's from the Netherlands.
I think I'm confused. I think because Murnau did another horror film that I haven't seen. I think I'm just confusing the titles. Maybe he did Faust.
Sure. I'm pretty sure he was the one that did Faust.
Yeah, I think that's
definitely
what I'm thinking.
German. I mean, yeah. That's definitely a German film, so.
Yeah, he did Faust, which I've always wanted to see, but I haven't. But yeah, so he, so yeah, his influence in the horror genre is, you know, I think, I don't know if words can really describe it.
I mean, I want to watch Faust just based off of, is this Dracula's hair? Oh my God.
What? What about Dracula's hair?
I don't know if it's supposed to be Dracula. He's wearing a cape, but in a crazy ass hood, not hood, but collar. And just from the photo that I'm seeing, he has the most wonderful like hair I've ever seen any person ever have.
For what?
Faust.
Faust.
He's a demon, I guess, not a vampire. So
yeah, I was gonna say, isn't Faust? He makes a deal with a demon.
It sounds like it.
Yeah, I don't know. I do want to see it.
I mean, I'm just looking. You're asking me about the plot. I haven't watched it. I'm literally looking at a photo of the best hair I've ever seen, and that's my only opinion that I'm giving on it at this moment.
And that's all you're leaving it at. You're like, this is all I need.
Yeah, I mean, I look at this photo and I want to watch the movie, like now.
But yeah, I do want to see it. I did. I was saying to Chuck, I did watch on my DVD of Nosferatu. There's a documentary on Murnau's life and his films, and I tried watching it, but it was like the fucking most boring thing I've ever watched. So I gave up. I gave up on my research for this episode. So. You know,
some docs just aren't good.
It was like, you know, it was just like it was told in like the most boring matter of fact way. And it's like, this is a location that Nosferatu shot. This is a location Nosferatu shot. This is another location from Nosferatu.
That reminds me of the book for 2001, the making of a Space Odyssey or whatever the hell it's called. A Space Odyssey.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways. That is the most boring book I have ever read. Some of the facts are really interesting, but it's told in the most boring way ever. There's like parts where it's like the script was starting to be written at this time on this day, but he might have actually started it at 9 p.m. on Thursday. And I'm like, Jesus Christ, like, I don't know if that's important or not. And then it's like, Stanley Kubrick almost kills people and they gloss over it and such, like, it's just a matter of fact, like, yeah, he didn't really care about people and he is kind of awful and a couple people almost died and he kept filming anyways.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I was like, oh, this will be informative. And then it's just like, you know, Murnau did this and Murnau did that. And it felt like someone spent like a half an hour putting this documentary together and then they're like, yeah, that's cool.
Yeah. It's all about tone. How you tell your story. It's important in documentaries too. I mean, a bonus feature of some sort. I mean, one of my favorite ones I talk about with Chuck all the time is an interview with John Ford on the Stagecoach Blu-ray for, Criterion. It is literally the worst interview I've ever seen. It's like just absolutely mesmerizing. Like they lose the sound and you can tell he's blind and old, but he's already like, ah, these guys, they don't even know how to work a camera. it's wonderful. But yeah, this is actually, I'm excited that we've gotten back into our themes.
Yeah, so am I.
Starting our horror theme a little bit early.
It's never too early.
I know, you kind of have to start it in September sometimes. I bought a Halloween decoration that I think you guys will like, but
I put up.
I'll keep it a surprise until it shows up.
I put up one decoration today.
Oh, that's cool.
It might be the only one I put up, but it's a Bates Motel sign. It's in my kitchen, and it's like a,
I'm sorry. I was gonna say though, James, when you have like. I don't know, the cane from the Wolfman displayed. I don't think you have to do a lot for
Halloween. That is true, yeah.
You got your diorama on display. You already got the Halloween decorations.
I do, yeah. The Bates Motel sign, it's a pretty atmospheric nightlight. I stepped out of my room and like the whole house was dark, but there's this like Bates Motel with the flickering no vacancy sign lighting up my kitchen.
It'd be great if you had a life-size sign in the front of your front yard.
That would be great. I wanted to put it in our window and have it up all year, but Lexi objected to that. So that's why.
Just remember that the next time she wants something, be like, hey, you objected to the Bates sign. The Bates Motel sign. We can't do this.
Yeah, I'll use that as leverage. Not until we put the Bates sign in the front yard.
Yeah, we're doing a pretty good job. We're skipping around different countries. We're skipping around, I think, almost completely different decades for the most part and different horror genres. So I'm excited about what's to come.
Yeah, so am I.
But yeah, I was just going to say that it looks like I wrote Spain as our next one, but maybe it should be Japan since it's the Japanese movie's like 10 years before the Spanish movie.
Yeah, I didn't know what direction you were going with. You went in chronological order for pretty much everything except for that one.
I was tired. chronologically tired order. I'm looking at it, and I'm like, yeah, and you know what? 52 years is our next one. I'm like, oh, well, this one's 42 years, so maybe we should do that one first. But I'm excited. I've jam-packed a bunch of Japanese movies into everything I've watched this year, so hopefully I can apply it to that episode.
Yeah,
something we should have talked about, was it last year?
Well, we did
Japan. A year before. Oh, 2 years ago. Yeah, we did Japan 2 years ago, and this was something that we almost did. I don't even remember the title of the movie. The fart. The
zombie ass.
Zombie ass. Okay, yeah,
because I was really hoping that we would do this one too, and then we rolled a dice to see what movie we'd pick, and it landed on Zombie Ass. People who haven't listened to our podcast are like, what the fuck are they talking about? But
we had a theme that was Japan. We all picked one, and then we were like, oh, we have enough room to do a fourth one. So we had like, I don't know, we all picked something in the top, like we all had ideas and we flipped for it essentially, or rolled dice for it, and it was Zombie Ass. Yeah. And James is like, we can change it if you want. And I was like, nah, no, that the dice have decided.
Yeah, because I
Zombie Ass.
I think we all picked like what, two movies? I couldn't think of a second one, and Lexi was like, well, what about that zombie? She jokingly suggested Zombie Ass, and I was like, yeah, fuck it, because what are the odds? I was really hoping the dice would land on this movie, our next movie, because I really wanted to see it at the time, and I just ended up seeing it on my own, and I really liked it. I'm excited to talk about
it. You know what? I think you put that Bates Motel thing in the window. Be like, Lexi, you actually did make one mistake. Zombie Ass. You think we forgot?
Yeah.
We'll never forget.
I'll use it to punish her for Zombie Ass. But yeah, I'm excited for that one. When Chuck first suggested this idea, I was like, yeah, maybe I'll go with something Italian or giallo. And he was like, I knew you'd say that. I was like, oh, shit. Yeah, he's right. I'm being predictable. So I was trying to think of something to do when Nosferatu popped into my head. I figured that'd be a good, you know, I was like, oh shit, I gotta do Nosferatu, because, like, you know, it's a German film. It's one of the earliest examples of a horror film. It's influenced the genre for, obviously, you know, decades. It's still being talked about today. And yeah, if rumors to be true, we might be getting another remake. So I felt like it was a movie we should be talking about.
It's been a couple years, so maybe.
Yeah, I don't know.
There were like two of them in production.
Yeah, yeah. Because there was this, it's like an indie studio. They've been doing what they call remixes of old silent films, where they just kind of remake them shot for shot, but with updated music and with dialogue. And they were going to do Nosferatu next. And I even pitched it on the Kickstarter for it. And Doug Jones was going to play Orlok, but then Doug Jones's career kind of took off after Shape of Water and Star Trek Discovery. And then word got out that Robert Eggers, the director of The Witch, was going to be making a remake of Nosferatu. But I don't know what's happening with that, because he supposedly he was going to do it after The Witch, and he made The Lighthouse. And then supposedly he's going to do it after Lighthouse, and he's doing a movie called The Norseman now. And what I listened to a podcast interview of him about it, and he played really coy when he was asked about it. So maybe it's something that, like, is still in development or whatever, but I'm curious to see if it does turn out.
Yeah, I'm excited. Well, it's certain, like, for him, I'm excited in his work. Like, he could be doing something like The Postman, and it's not a remake. It's literally just following Postman around. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I felt like, you know, if there's anyone that could tackle a very, really interesting Nosferatu remake, it would be him. So I do hope that there is truth that is something happening, that's going to be happening. But I guess time will tell. So yeah, I guess, anyone have any final thoughts?
Start, Chuck.
Okay. yeah, I would say my final thought is, you know, I feel like everyone should give this movie a shot. I feel like it's I don't want to say it's a hard sell, but I know for a fact, just even people that me and Justin have been friends with before, as soon as you start this is like a weird combination. You know, sometimes you throw out foreign movies and it's like, reading. Then it's like you throw out silent movies, like reading, and there's not even sound effects in the background. Like it's a double combination there.
Black and white.
Yeah, black and white. Oh my God. Not even color to look at. Yeah, there's some people that hear that combination and in their mind they've automatically tuned it out. But I think it's interesting. I would be willing. I would wonder how many people know of Nosferatu just from SpongeBob, from that one episode where he's the one turning the lights on and off, the hash slinging slasher. And that's just the whole joke is just them going, "Oh, Nosferatu." there's probably people that have just seen that one clip and have no clue who that is or that it's even a reference to a film or anything. They just know.
I feel old now. I never knew about that.
Oh my God. That's a classic episode, man.
I was Ren and Stimpy.
I have had people mention SpongeBob to me when I bring up Nosferatu, and I usually am very confused. So I'm glad now that I know.
I love the Joe Hill book that I got. And it's this license plate, and I had the book for like 2 days, and I was like, "Oh, it says Nosferatu." I don't know why I thought it was like gibberish or something. Then when I just kind of read it out loud, I'm like, "Oh my God, I didn't know that."
That book is very good too. I enjoyed Nosferatu the book.
Yeah, it's a great one.
The show was meh. I only watched
it's a couple. Still on.
It got canceled.
Okay, yeah.
Good. I don't know. I don't know. Somebody probably was enjoying it though. Walking Dead got 50 seasons, so
yeah. Yeah, the show was just kind of it was slow paced.
There's some things that they just shouldn't make in the shows. It's like they have good property and but they, I don't know if they rush it or what the hell happens.
I feel like,
or maybe they're passionate about it and they just suck at execution.
I feel like with Nosferatu, not to go into spoilers if you haven't read it, but it's a lot like It, where there's like a childhood part and like an adulthood part. And I feel like someone saw that and thought they could like stretch it out into a TV show, whereas I feel like it'd probably be served better as a limited show. But then again, I only watched like two episodes of the TV show. So what do I know?
No, that's enough. I sometimes, if everybody talks up a show, I'll give it four episodes. Worst case scenario, I watched the whole goddamn show and I hate the whole thing, which has happened before. Yeah. And I've tried quitting and Chuck will be like, there's only one season left. You got to finish it. And I'm like, fine, I'll fucking finish it. This is a very specific thing.
Yeah.
But that is our episode. I can hear Chuck.
Damn it.
Chuck's train.
Uh-huh.
Anyways, just so you can find me, I am on Twitter at JJMorgan19. Chuck is at ChuckFinn66. He doesn't do anything on there. And James?
I'm at James Reinhardt on Twitter.
At Cinema Demore on Facebook and, well, it's actually / Facebook. At Cinema Demore on Twitter. And the podcast is like fucking everywhere now. Anytime I can put it on something, I do. So I'm not really quite sure everywhere it's at, but it's definitely on Apple, Google Podcasts, Spotify. Might be on iHeartRadio and Pandora and all that fun stuff. Yeah, it's like, hey, do you want to put it on iHeartRadio? I'm like, fuck yeah, I want to put it on iHeartRadio. I don't know who we're going to have listen to it, but I bet there's somebody that's like, I only will do iHeartRadio podcasts. That's it.
Yeah.
And we're there, I think. I don't know.
Yeah, we're everywhere.
But that was a nice episode. It's nice getting back in the swing of things. It's nice having themes and obviously sounding better, as weird as this is.
Yeah, we're still getting used to being remote. It's weird having to get into a new rhythm, but I'm sure by the time we finally get into a rhythm, we'll be like, hey, let's do it in person again.
Hey, I look forward to when we do it in person, because that's quite a different experience. This is just like a weird phone call.
It is, yeah. I can't wait to interact with humans again.
Well, maybe next year.
Which I never thought I'd say. Yeah, maybe next year.
Give it 2022.
Yeah. Well, that's when my wedding is, so so hopefully. It's funny, I was talking with Lexi about Nosferatu, and I'm like, yeah, it's almost 100 years old. I'm like, wow, it's going to be 100 years in 2022. And she's like, that's when we're getting married. And
is that like, when you found out?
No, I knew. And she's like, okay. She's like, we should do a Nosferatu thing for our wedding. She jokingly suggested that. And I was like, no, we shouldn't. I was like, I love this movie, but not enough to get married to it.
And one of the games you can play is like, guess which coffin James is in. This is like a pile of coffins.
We're thinking of doing a scavenger hunt, so we could probably work in Nosferatu in some way.
That's how you keep your you can keep your wedding numbers down. They can't find your wedding if they don't succeed at the hunt.
Oh, that's actually a pretty brilliant idea.
Yeah, you can send out tons of invites and be like, sorry you couldn't figure it out, idiot.
Well, we looked at the venue today, which we loved, but it's not a hike, but there is like a bit of finagling to get there, and I'm already anticipating the how do we get there calls. But we'll cross a bridge when we get to it.
Your wedding invite is a pin drop. You're like, you have to click on this, type this link in your computer and get a pin drop.
Oh man. I that would be a good way to sort out who we don't want to come. But I don't want to say where it is just yet, but
Yeah, things change.
Yeah, things change. We love it. We want it to be our venue, and it's a place everyone knows in Pittsburgh, and it's kind of like you have to take like a slightly different turn. But I feel like, you know, obviously if there's not like I feel like people, if they have to take like a slightly different way to get somewhere, they can get completely confused. But what do I know?
That just sounds like Pittsburgh.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It's like, oh, I don't keep going along the way I know. I have to do this.
There's no signs, and there's this weird turn, and there's way too many cars parked, so you won't be able to see this turn that you need to make.
Yeah.
There's construction, so I'm sorry, you can't even go that way.
Yeah. We'll see. But yeah, and the location is very atmospheric, so I could slip in a sly Nosferatu reference if I really wanted to.
Oh, I wonder if I've been there. I'm going to guess.
Not now. Yeah, we could talk not podcast.
Not live.
Yeah, not live, but...
We're allowed to talk outside the podcast?
I know, right?
Man, I didn't know that.
But,
James is not letting me talk to him outside the podcast.
I interact with you guys outside the podcast.
Yeah, we text everyone. I don't got much to say. I've been stuck in my house for too long.
Yeah, none of us... Anytime I get asked, like, what's new, I'm like, well, you know... Pandemic.
Yeah, not a great conversation starter now.
Yeah, there is like not really much to say as far as like development. It's like, well, same old, same old.
James is like, just ask me how the weather is and let's get this over with.
Yeah.
All right. That was a good one. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Yeah, thank you guys. Tune in next week.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Thank you.